Thank you, Ross. Welcome again. It's good to work through our series in Everyday Grace, and we're up to the topic of service, as Ross has outlined. And as we've been going through this series, we've realised, haven't we, that Everyday Grace is something we can grow in as we grow in the area of confessing or reading the Bible or prayer. Hospitality last week, and today we're thinking about what do our everyday actions look like and how can they help us to grow in faith, and not only grow in our own faith but share our faith with others through our actions. So that's what we're thinking about. And one of the questions I tend to ask people that come to Barton and want to get stuck in is a bit like this image from the website, serving teams, how do you want to serve? Don't worry, you don't need to read the text, you can go online later. But it talks about how we grow as we serve and become part of the church by using our gifts, by thinking about the teams that maybe particularly appeal. There's a few teams up there. Welcome. Would you like to serve by using your gifts on welcome? Would you like to serve by helping to set up and run with the PA? Would you like to use your gifts? And what's your serving preference? Is it kids or youth? And actually, as I was thinking about service, thought, I wonder whether that's at the heart of it. And I'm not sure it is. I think it's great for us to identify our gifts and our passions and to use them. That's really important. And the Bible talks about that. But actually, is serving or the heart of serving a bit different? Is the heart of service about doing something not in line with your preference, but somebody else's? Not about what you want, but what actually is to serve practically to help others. And I think I sometimes, and I assume that others do too, get serving wrong. How we get serving so wrong. I'll give you an example of how I did this. When I was at All Nations Bible College, we were put into teams to do chores, to do practical serving tasks, to grow our servant-hearted character. Now, this all sounds very well, yeah, I like the theory. Did I like the practice? Maybe not quite so much. Because instead of choosing which team that I got to practically serve on, I was allocated, I was assigned a team. Imagine if I just assigned everyone a team. You came to Barton and I decide, oh yeah, you're going to go there. That's where the need is. Regardless to your gifts, you're going to serve on the sound desk and we'll all leave with a headache or not hearing a word of what's said. I was given this task to do one of the most boring things ever. Not go in the library and read the books, which I would have quite enjoyed, but to take every book off the shelf and dust it down and put it back. Now, I didn't have to do the whole library. That would have taken the 3 years that I studied there. But for 2 hours, I had to work my way down this bookshelf, taking off the books, dusting them down. I couldn't even see any dust on it. The person that had done it before had done such a good job, I wondered whether there was any point. Maybe I could just not do it and spend my time reading some of the books I wanted to read. Would that be okay? Well, not really. And so I did this. So I did this in my first year, and I was asked again to do it in my second year. Whether it was because I did a good job or a bad job, I'm not sure. But often when we serve, we kind of like to kind of say, can I serve over here in this way? Can I respond to what I feel I'm good at? And there is benefit in that. But this talk, I want us to focus a bit more on seeing what the Bible says about serving, not from a place of our preference, but to put others' needs first. God's need. God's not need for us to serve him, but our need to grow a heart of service through being like him. And one of the things that we tend to do is find that we can serve God for the wrong reasons, serve others for the wrong reasons, and even serve ourselves rather than God or others. Let me explain a bit how. Serving God for the wrong reasons. Some of the reasons might be because we feel we need to pay him back. He's died on a cross for us. We've just remembered that. Maybe we feel and can get trapped into that thought that, well, because God has done so much for me, I've just got to pay him back. And so I'll do that through my actions. And if I commit to a serving team, if I kind of do practical things through the week, for others, then that'll be good. Somehow that'll mean that God loves me more. I think that's the wrong reason. Another reason might be because we want to get something from God. Maybe we're praying about a job situation and we think, well, if I do a bit of extra service, then God might answer my prayers. And so service becomes twisted a bit, doesn't it? Our motive and our reason for serving God is wrong, because we want to take something from God rather than give ourselves to God. How about serving others for the wrong reasons? It might be to show that we're really competent and good at something, really good at setting up the chairs on a Sunday morning. Ross does that every week. That's his task. I think he does fairly well, doesn't he? He manages to get them in a straight line with enough gap in between. And does he do that to please others? Does he do it just to show he's a holy guy? Hopefully not. But it's quite easy for us to serve other people for the wrong reasons, to just so that we belong, because we're doing something and we're contributing, or just to show that we've got some sort of status. See, our hearts can twist something that's meant to be about others and make it about ourselves. Serving myself, not God and others. Serving by thinking that it's about our identity, something that God requires us to do, rather than out of gratitude. So these areas maybe challenge our thinking a bit. And how we get serving so wrong. We think it's all about us serving God. At least I certainly can get trapped in that place. So what's the answer? What does the Bible say about this? How can we overcome our failings with service? Sometimes I hope we get it right. We serve because we love and we want to just bless others. Whether through the week, whether on a Sunday, whether in our homes, whether at work, whatever the context is. But how can we grow in this? How can we serve from the right motives? Well, let's look at how Jesus gets it right. This is Mark 10, verse 45. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. The context of this chapter is Jesus has just been asked a question by his two of his disciples, John and James, their brothers, and they're kind of plotting to figure out who's going to be the greatest amongst the disciples. And they want to sit at God's right and left-hand side. And so they kind of say, well, you know, who's going to be able to sit either side of you? Can we? And Jesus replies to say, no, that's not the way it works. The Gentiles, the non-Jews, the kind of people that you live amongst, these Romans, they lord it over others. They demonstrate leadership as something about power and authority and position and hierarchy. And Jesus says, no, that's not the way it works. In fact, the greatest is one that's more like a slave, more like a servant. In fact, the first is the one who's ready to be last. He kind of reverses it. And then he says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. We're going to understand a bit about what that means. So how did Jesus get this so right? The Son of Man, what does that really mean? For even the Son of Man. Let's start with that. It's a phrase that's used in the New Testament, particularly about Jesus. And Jesus says, I am the Son of Man, or the Son of Man has come. And he refers to himself as the Son of Man, and it causes a stir. But in the Old Testament, we come across it first in the book of Numbers, one of the first books in the Bible. And it's talking about being human, humans, people, the Son of Man being a human. And then we get to the book of Ezekiel, which is who's a prophet. And there's another reference to the Son of Man, but one that changes tone slightly. And Ezekiel's referred to being a Son of Man who is filled with the Spirit, and filled with the Spirit to take a message to the people. In fact, God's message to the people. So suddenly this Son of Man title moves from being just about people towards being one that's about a Spirit-filled prophet role, to speak on behalf of God, to take a message, the very words of God, to others. And then we get to Daniel, and in the book of Daniel, we read this in chapter 7. It says, as I looked, thrones were placed, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire came out from before him. 1,000,000 served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. So this picture of the Ancient of Days, this great God-like title, who is being served, who is full of power, full of glory. And this is then what is said. And behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, one that shall not be destroyed. Suddenly we have this Ancient of Days who welcomes in this one that's like a son of man, and is full of power and glory, and given dominion and an eternal kingdom. One that Jesus, that phrase son of man, then uses to say, I am he. I am the man. The human, who is more than that, is spirit-filled, God-like, in fact, working with the Ancient of Days, one with the Ancient of Days, to be the one who is king of all, has dominion, and whom people serve. So the Son of Man title shows that God, that Jesus is divine, is God, is powerful and full of power and glory and kingdom responsibility. And so when Jesus then in the Gospels talks about himself being the Son of Man, who's going to come on the clouds in power and glory, people are thinking, whoa, that's a big statement. You're pointing yourself back to that Daniel passage, that prophecy about the Son of Man. And then even at Jesus' death, just before, when he's before the high priest, what is the last straw for the Jewish leaders? It's the fact that Jesus says that he is the Son of Man who will return in power. So this title is quite impressive. Do we agree? This is quite an impressive title, and one that then Jesus uses about himself. And this is what he said. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. See, Jesus is this servant king. He is the one who is full of power and glory and yet ready to let go of his power and glory and serve people. That's quite striking, isn't it? That's quite hard-hitting. He didn't come to have lots of people just listen to him and serve him and be waited upon by others. He came, and what do we see as we read the Gospels? We see that he sat and ate with others, and that he served others, and he washed their feet, and he met with the down and outs in society. He was certainly not like the kings and the lords all around. He was quite the opposite. But he wasn't just the servant king, he was also the suffering servant. And this is a phrase that's used in the Old Testament, and we can see it in the New as well. And Jesus, instead of simply serving and loving others through his actions, also displays that he's ready to suffer on their behalf. A well-known passage in Philippians chapter 2 says this, Jesus, who being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. So this Son of Man, full of power and glory, was ready to lay aside his power in a sense and serve others rather than just be served. But more than that, he was ready to suffer for humanity. See, precisely because he was in the very nature God, he served others. The heart of God is to serve. The heart of God is to consider others' preferences and interests, not just And so as Jesus comes and models God to us and is the example of God's love, he does it by serving. And he does it by serving by becoming a ransom for many. He did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. So Jesus, the Son of Man, lays down his life. That's what we've just celebrated. He dies on a cross in the place of sinful people. He serves humanity in the greatest way by paying for our penalty, by dying for our sin. Wow, the suffering servant. So how did Jesus get it so right? Like this. There's an image on the screen that's just coming up. And the image shows two ancient Greek gods, Zeus and Hermes. And there's a story about them that goes a bit like this. They were wondering what people were like when they worshipped and paid homage to them. So they thought, well, the way we can figure this out is to come down to earth and dress as slaves and servants. So they took off their godly clothes and they put on peasant-like attire. They clothed themselves in rags and they walked amongst the people. This is how the story goes. And this myth then talks about how they were shocked by the way that they were being worshipped. And then they tore off their rags, they tore off their servant-like clothes, and they put on their Olympian splendor. They kind of clothed themselves in great grand clothing, as they had. And these gods of kind of strength and power and endurance, and the Olympics are kind of associated with, are displaying who they really are. They had a disguise on, and then they removed their disguise. See, God's not like that in Jesus. He didn't put a disguise on that was servant-like traits and clothes. And then he took them off and he rose again and he showed actually all along that was just a cover. The very heart of God is to serve, is to love, is to die for those in need, to give us life. Jesus didn't act as the greatest con man. He wasn't wearing a costume. Jesus was a servant. See, Jesus got serving so right. Jesus came to serve you by saving you. See, we too often, and I know I too often think that I can serve God. That's what it's about. It's about me serving God. Actually, God has served me by sending his son Jesus to die in my place, to give me life. Jesus came to serve you by saving you. And from that point, we can start thinking about what it looks like to serve others and him. A quote from Tim Keller says, "Love arises from gospel faith and hope and overflows into loving and serving our neighbors rather than using them to serve ourselves." See, too often we get it wrong by using people to serve our own needs. Maybe we practically help someone at work. We kind of go around to fix someone's car because we know how to do that. And then we think, oh, well, now I've kind of done something. They'll do something for me and if I need to in the future. Or I'll get acknowledged and liked more at work if I put in some extra time. Or if I join an extra team at church, suddenly that means the elders will be really, really proud of me. And I might get a chance to lead something else. It's not how it works, is it? But too often we can serve ourselves. The way to combat that is to realize from gospel faith and hope the love that comes from God so that we serve our neighbors rather than using them to serve ourselves. So how can we start to serve like Jesus? How can we do that? And I think one thing is to realize we're serving Jesus when we serve others. And there's a really powerful part of Matthew's Gospel, chapter 25, we'll look at to see how Jesus kind of explains this to his disciples. But if we see that it's not just the person in front of us that we're serving, but actually Jesus, I think suddenly our issues with people might kind of diminish and it might become more full of integrity. Listen to these verses from verse 34. Come, this is Jesus speaking, come you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was ill and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you ill or in prison and go to visit you? The king replied, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. How are we to serve others? We serve others by realizing actually we're also serving Jesus as we serve others, whether those in need or those not in need that just need some help, whether those that maybe are struggling in society and don't have a car and need a lift, or don't have food and need a bit of extra care financially, or need someone to meet with them because they're lonely. How can we serve others? Well, maybe by getting involved in the community cafe and meeting people that are a bit lonely in the community of the Barton Road estate. Maybe by thinking about the local projects and charities that are running in Canterbury and how we could take time to consider caring for those that are homeless, those that have had a hard life and just need love. And as we do that, we're serving Jesus. We're serving Jesus as we serve others. The next thing that I think helps us to serve more like Jesus is making service a lifestyle of everyday grace to others. And it might be easy to think, well, I've signed up to a team. I kind of do a few good deeds in my week. Surely that's okay. Actually, what we find is for Jesus, it was a lifestyle. It was a normal way of living, not a thing that was on a to-do list and ticked off. So maybe we could start to serve like Jesus by making service a lifestyle of everyday grace to others. And this powerful account in John 13 helps us to see this really clearly. Let me just move to the next slide. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and blank. What does he do? Remember what the verse says here? It says, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So Jesus is aware he's the Son of Man. He's aware that he's the one full of power and to be served for all eternity. So what's he going to do? Now, if you were hearing this or reading this for the first time, you might fill the blank with something like picked up a microphone and said, I'm here, the Son of Man, it's going to start happening. Or maybe picked up his crown and put it on his head, said, I'm in charge, follow me, guys. It's okay, we're going to overthrow the Romans. We're going to see this kingdom established. Or maybe pick up a sword and go, the fight's going to start. I'm the king, I'm in charge. This is how I display my love for you, faithful followers. We might fill the blanks with something like that. This is how the blanks are actually filled. James, help me out. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel round his waist. And once he'd wrapped a towel round his waist, he got a bowl of water, he got on his knees and washed the disciples' feet. Dirty, smelly, a servant like job. Nobody else had done it at that point. They're in the middle of the meal and somehow still it hadn't been done. This is how Jesus displays love. This is how Jesus displays what being a servant is, what being the Son of Man is. Yes, the Son of Man. Yes, the servant king, the suffering servant. See, this was to point forward to his death on the cross. He was ready to demonstrate sacrificial love by doing such a task to prepare them for what he was going to do by going to the cross. So if we move on again, how can we start to serve like Jesus? Or by making service a lifestyle of every great day for others. But maybe we're tempted to think that we're super, it's about being super people, about being kind of super people, which the next slide shows. Super people or serving people. Now, there's always these kind of great films coming out, aren't there, with Superman versus Batman, or apparently Aquaman's coming out, I found out 2 days ago. I've never heard of Aquaman. I'm sure some in the room have, and will fill me in later. But there's all sorts of super heroes on our screens. And maybe we think it's about being a bit like a superhero for God, a super person at Barton, a super person at work, at home, in your neighborhood, to kind of pick up litter when no one else is. And people go, wow, you are clearly like Jesus. Is that the way it works? It's not about being super people, but being serving people. And so John 13, 14 to 15 says, now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. It's about being a people that serve because we've been served by Jesus. That is what he calls us to. It's not, can I outserve my friend or my fellow church member? This is about serving because that's what Jesus models and calls us to do. So we're going to finish with 7 practical pointers. Don't worry, I'm not going to take a minute on each even. But 7 days of the week, how can you practically live out this example? So how can we follow Jesus' example of loving service this week? How do we do that? The first thing I want to say is we can serve without needing to be noticed or acknowledged before others. Because if you're like me, if you do something, it's quite nice when say, oh, thank you. Oh, I saw you did that. That was really good. And my motivation can be slightly based on the fact that I might be thanked or noticed and affirmed. And that's a bit dangerous, actually, because it can lead to pride, can't it? So your challenge tomorrow, on Monday, is to serve without needing to be noticed. Think of something practical you could do. How could you serve without needing acknowledgement before others? The next slide shows a quote from Richard Foster. True service rests contented in hiddenness. That's how he describes true service. Do something that's hidden. Number 2, on Tuesday, do some unimportant and hidden task. So don't just do it because you want to be noticed, but do something that's kind of quite, on the surface, mundane and trivial and ordinary. Because do you know what? Those things need to be done. And why not be the person that does it? Why not be the person that washes up someone else's mug? Why not do something just ordinary and relatively unimportant? John Ortberg says it's the ministry of the mundane. Actually, that's kind of what Jesus models. So I think we should be able to do that one too. Number 3, on Wednesday, what could you do? Serve by letting go of the need to be in charge. See, what I know I can do is serve, but still need to control how the thing happens, or make sure that I do it my way. Maybe we need to kind of let go of that master role, that leading, that serving with a sense of being in charge, and do it the way someone else wants. Do it not because we want to display our control, but because it just needs to be done. How can you do that this week? On Thursday, what could you do? Number 4, serve without prejudice, not just those who are easy to serve. Again, I think we can fall into this trap, can't we? We can serve the people that we get on with. Oh yeah, well, actually that shouldn't be too hard. It's one way of loving our friends. Well, hopefully we do that. How about serving those you struggle with? How about serving those that are your enemies, that really have annoyed you and hurt you? Wow, that's true service. Others preferences, not your own. Serve without prejudice. So what are we up to? Friday, I think. Friday, you're feeling tired. It's the end of the week. And you serve by giving others your time, resources, and practical skills. What practically can you do? What time can you give to listen? How can you help people with what you have that they don't have? Serving is practical. It's every day. It's real, nitty gritty. How can you help those that need help? But on Saturday, I want you to think, it's not just about me serving others. How can you be a humble individual and allow others to serve you? This is good, isn't it? Because if we're all serving one another, we need to be able to receive service too. And the proud person says, no, I don't need any help. I'm not going to ask for help. I'm not going to receive help. The humble individual allows others to serve them. So we're back on to Sunday. Answer this question. What's my serving next step? How can I serve within my family, my friends, my work, my church, my community? Not because out of the wrong motivation and reasons, but because Christ has served you. At the moment, we're multi-site across two sites. We'd love to be across three when we're ready, don't worry. But that's got to be our aim and our goal. But we need to continue to establish ourselves across two sites. And that means sacrificial serving. And thank you for many that are doing that. But why not think about once a month helping at another site to the one you regularly attend? There's needs in the creche team, in welcome team, in forming more bands, in all sorts of opportunities. Fill out a next steps card. But as we finish and move into a bit of response, I'm going to pray and pray that we would capture the heart that God would capture us have of Christ serving us in spite of being the Son of Man. Instead, because of being the Son of Man, he serves us by dying for us so that we can serve him in love. Father God, I pray that we would know that in its truth, that we would understand more of your servant heart, that as we see that the Son of Man would come and take on the appearance, the very being of a human, that you would serve and let go of all your power in many senses and instead serve on your knees in the dirt. Lord, help us to realize that you've come to serve us by saving us. And may we then be motivated and changed and transformed to serve one another for the right reasons, just like you call us to. In Jesus' name, amen.